Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good Friday morning, everybody, and we will jump right in today with help. For those of you, and it might be nearly all of you, who are both afraid and confused about the Heartbleed bug. Have you heard about it yet? The encryption security flaw, known as Heartbleed, might have made you and your online data vulnerable to theft. This has nothing to do with the NSA, and it's no hyperbole. We will hear what you need to do right now, and we'll take your questions for Rusty Foster. He is a computer programmer and writer who wrote about Heartbleed for The New Yorker on their website yesterday. He also writes the Daily Today and Tabs newsletter for Newsweek. Rusty Foster, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And listeners, are you both scared and confused about Heartbleed? What are your questions? 212-433-WNYC. We are here to help. 212-433-9692. Have you changed any passwords yet? What other questions do you have? You can also post a question to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or call 212-433-9692. A little bit of a spoiler alert. Rusty's going to tell us maybe don't rush and change all your passwords right away. So hold off and listen to this conversation and take part in it. And Rusty, really, we never, ever on this show want to be alarmist about anything. But from everything I'm reading, including your post on The New Yorker, which is also a publication that tends not to be alarmist, Heartbleed is pretty bad. How alarmed are you?
It's an alarming bug in the sense that it's a real bad mistake. We don't know yet how bad, the fallout actually is, how much data was lost. I mean, we don't really know if any data was lost necessarily. So, I've been comparing it to the Target data breach where they lost millions of customer records that we know about for sure. That definitely happened. It's comparable, but we honestly have no idea if anybody's passwords were even compromised. So, yeah, don't panic. This isn't probably something you need to panic about yet.
So but, you don't know if anybody's actually been injured by this bug?
No. I don't think anybody knows that yet.
And yet you wrote on the New Yorker site that Heartbleed is as bad as it is possible for a security flaw to be. What did you mean by that?
In terms of the bug itself, what it allowed to happen and what potentially could have happened is really bad. It's a problem in a core part of the internet security system. And it's very widespread. A lot of different packages use OpenSSL. And it allows remote access to computer memory, which is really terrible.
Okay, OpenSSL. Here we go. In your post for The New Yorker, I think you did a really admirable job of explaining how the encryption system works and how the Heartbleed bug might have screwed with the system for the past 2 years. So do you think you can do that again? You can take a couple of minutes and lay this out if you want. Do it this time live on the radio?
Sure. That sounds terrific. So the problem was, OpenSSL is basically a library of computer functions that other programmers use within their programs to avoid having to write all of this complicated encryption software themselves. So the idea is that some professionals write the encryption software for you, and then you can just use it. So if you are writing something that needs to make a secure connection to another computer, you use OpenSSL, you call certain functions in it, and it takes care of the sort of underlying nuts and bolts of doing that. And one of the features that OpenSSL provides, and it's part of the TLS, the Transport Layer Security spec, is called Heartbeat, which is just a really simple sort of a ping to the opposite side of a secure connection to make sure that it's still there and that it's still listening to you. And the way the Heartbeat is supposed to work is one side of the connection will send a little chunk of data to the other side, and the other side is supposed to send that same chunk of data right back. It's really simple, really straightforward. The problem was that somebody discovered that the way this code was written in OpenSSL, if I'm one side of the connection and I send you a Heartbeat request, and I say, I'm sending you 65 kilobytes of data, and all I send you is 1 kilobyte of data, what OpenSSL was doing was taking that 1 kilobyte that I sent and adding 64 more kilobytes from just whatever was nearby in the system memory and then sending all of that stuff back. So what I get back from my request is 64 kilobytes of whatever happens to be in the server's random access memory at the moment. And this is bad because that can be all kinds of sensitive stuff like encryption keys, passwords, you know, login tokens to websites, all sorts of things.
So in a sentence, the bug allows an attacker to pull a small amount of random data from a secure server without being detected. And right. They don't know what's in the data, but it could be sensitive information like passwords.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you can think of it like a keyhole. It was opening up a little keyhole into the running computer's memory. And anybody anywhere on the internet could just peep through that keyhole one little glimpse at a time. And the problem is that if you do that over and over, there isn't really any logging. Nobody's monitoring heartbeat requests. They're very, like, you know, lightweight kind of thing. And so you can do it over and over, and you just keep getting little chunks of data back. And if you did it for a long time, you can amass a large amount of data and, you know, analyze that, start actually digging through it bit by bit for sensitive stuff.
And as you keep referring to the term heartbeat, that's why this bug is called Heartbleed.
Right.
And it's not a virus. Is that important?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. It's important in the sense that we know exactly what the problem is. We know where it is in OpenSSL. It was fixed, and the fix was released at the same time as the bug was announced. So they knew about it a couple weeks early, and they got the fix in place. And a lot of major vendors knew about it beforehand. I mean, Google, I think, had patched all of their servers before the bug was announced because one of the discoverers was somebody who worked for Google Security.
So now that you've done about as clear a job as someone could do of explaining what this is, and people are thinking, well, this is still really over my head. Just tell me what to do. It's not quite as straightforward as changing your passwords, all of them right away, right?
Right. So this is sort of a case-by-case basis because there are some services use OpenSSL and some don't. And they've been kind of dribbling out information a little bit at a time. There are scanning tools that have sort of been able to scan and look at different servers and see if they're responding to heartbeat requests and if they're sending the wrong data back. So you can sort of probe servers and find out whether they're vulnerable. But it's been difficult
you
to
can.
Know.
So how do you do that? Like, are you talking about the server of my credit card company? Or what kinds of servers are you talking about?
Any kind. I mean, there are people who are scanning the entire internet right now and literally just checking one IP at a time, one computer at a time, and seeing if they're responding to SSL requests or TLS requests and if they're vulnerable to this bug. But for people listening, you know, that's not going to do you that much good because that's sort of a computer science research question.
Right.
What you want to know is, you know, is my Yahoo Mail vulnerable? Is my Gmail vulnerable? And that, I think, as of now, most of the major services have been patched and have been updated, and they should have notified you if they were concerned.
And so Facebook and Instagram and Pinterest and Tumblr were all affected. So were Dropbox, SoundCloud, and OkCupid. I'm reading that banks seem to be okay. So is PayPal. All true so far?
To the best of my knowledge, yeah.
And if you have a login for Intuit or TurboTax, you need to change your password, I'm told. True?
I have not seen that, but I mean, there's lists, essentially. I've been sending people a list that's on Mashable.com that they seem to be keeping pretty well updated.
Yeah, and that's what I'm reading from, too, is the Mashable list. Apparently, it's unclear if the IRS site was affected.
Mm-hmm. So it's been sort of a piecemeal operation trying to figure out what the potential problems are. And even the people who are, even the sites that are affected, we still don't actually know if anything was taken. And, like, honestly, we'll probably never know if anything was taken because there just aren't logs of any of this.
So should people go and change their Facebook and Instagram passwords right now, for example?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
As long as, you know, the risk, I guess, is if you're changing a password on a service that hasn't already been updated, that was vulnerable and that still is vulnerable, when you change your password, you know, for a moment, your password and your login stuff is going to be in that system's memory. And if somebody is currently, you know, mining through it with this bug, they could be grabbing your password, is why people are saying maybe you should hold off for a couple of days.
And listeners, if you want to see that Mashable list of affected sites, we post a link to that on our site. You can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show if that's the easiest way for you to get there. Let's take a phone call. Jess in Hoboken, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Jess.
Hi, Brian. How are you and your guest? I was wondering just how different passwords should be from site to site in order to have them be a little less vulnerable when one of them gets grabbed this way. I know ideally they should be totally different for each site, but realistically, you know, I can't remember 1,000 different passwords. So could we get a couple of hints on just how many characters need to be different or just how far apart they should be?
Can you help them? I think our guest couldn't hear your call. Rusty?
No, I'm sorry. I can't hear the call.
Oh, okay. We'll try to fix that. We'll call that the radio bug. Our own little Heartbleed here. Rusty Foster is our guest, by the way. He wrote about the Heartbleed bug on the New Yorker website. He also writes the Daily Today and Tabs newsletter for Newsweek. And maybe you've been hearing about this encryption security flaw known as Heartbleed. We're using Rusty to help explain it to you and explain why people are saying to change your passwords, some of them right away, some of them wait a little bit, on many, many of the major sites on which you may be using passwords. And we'll take your questions, which I think Rusty will be able to hear from this point on, at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So Jess was asking about the recommendation that he hears sometimes that we shouldn't use the same passwords on every site. But he's not going to be able to remember 1,000 different passwords of his. So how much do you think it's important to vary your password, and to what degree?
It's very important, and I totally sympathize. I mean, I work, you know, I'm a programmer. I have zillions of passwords. I have passwords to all kinds of different servers and services and company stuff and personal stuff, and I have lots of passwords. So what I use is called a password safe, and it's software that you can install. There's one called 1Password. It's one called LastPass. There's a free one called KeePass. And so it's a program that you install, and it keeps all of your passwords for you. It's like a lockbox where you can put all your passwords. And usually they have features like they'll generate you a long random password. So when you need to log into something, if it's a website, usually you can just pull it up in your password safe and click login, and it goes to the website and logs you in. Otherwise, you can, you know, copy and paste the password.
Or you can get a big old yellow legal pad and keep a list of all your passwords.
That's not a great idea, because then they're written down somewhere. So, you know, these password safes will keep them encrypted on your computer, where even if the data was stolen, you still can't get into them.
Let's take another caller and see if you can hear him. Eric in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. So to continue on with the password wallet comment, one of the best things to do is to copy and paste your passwords from the password wallet into the password box when you go to websites, so that you're not actually typing and you can actually remember or use like 20 character passwords. So it's very important that people have a different password for all secure sites. And to make it easy, one would just copy and paste the username and password to be able to do this.
Right. Eric, thank you. And since you couldn't hear that, is there a difference between what you were describing as a password safe and the phrase that he just used, which is password wallet? Is that a term you're familiar with?
Yeah, sure. It's another word for essentially the same concept.
And you recommend that people use two-factor security whenever possible. What's that?
That is a lot of, you know, Twitter offers it, Gmail offers it. Essentially, you give them your phone number, your cell phone number, and you get a password, you set your password. So when you go to log into, if you have two-factor authentication on Twitter, for example, you log into your Twitter account and it says, okay, it gives you a little box and says, we're sending you a notification. And the service will either send you a code, it'll either text you, you know, like a four-digit code, and you enter that in the site, or Twitter does a thing through the app. So it sends you a notification and you check okay on the app, and then it logs you into the site automatically. So what it requires is that you have something that you know, which is your password, and then also something that you have, which is your phone. Both of those have to be present for you to log into the service. So if somebody does steal your password, they still can't actually get into your account because they don't also have your phone.
Shiva in Teaneck is calling in, and I'm not going to put her on the air since you can't hear her, but she asks, why would these companies use something that's free? I don't understand open source.
Actually, you know, open source was a great choice here, and it remains a great choice. OpenSSL is still certainly one of the best choices if you need to do any kind of TLS, you know, secure connections in your software. The thing about cryptography is the openness of cryptography is really important. Like the cryptographic algorithms themselves have to be open and have to be known for them to be secure, because people have, you know, scientists and mathematicians have to be able to look at this stuff and say, here's a problem, here's another problem, you've made a mistake here. If the code is a secret or if the algorithm is a secret, then nobody knows how secure it is. It could have a really obvious bug, but nobody's ever going to know about it. And then if somebody does find out about it, they know and nobody else knows. So in this case, you know, all software has bugs. This bug should have been found a long time ago, and it wasn't for a variety of reasons. But open source remains a really good choice, and it remains probably more secure than anything that's not open source.
I said at the beginning as kind of a joke that this data security or encryption security flaw that we're going to talk about has nothing to do with the NSA, but actually in one way maybe it does. There have been reports that Heartbleed could have been exploited by the NSA. Is there any reason to believe that has happened, and would that be in relation to the metadata program that Edward Snowden revealed?
I don't know if it would have anything to do with the metadata programs, but I do think that there's every likelihood that the NSA knew about this, and that if anybody was well positioned and well equipped to take advantage of it, it would certainly be the NSA or large sort of state-sponsored organizations like that. Really taking advantage of this bug, and they had 2 years to do it potentially. If you had known about this issue 2 years ago, and if you were the NSA, who has enormous data centers and huge capacity to store data and analyze data, they could have just been pulling in little chunks of memory from servers for a long time and then running all kinds of searches on them, which lets you, you know, if you find the right keys, you can get into the server. If you get into the server, you can listen to traffic in a, you know, a broader, on a larger scale. The problem with exploiting this particular bug is that it takes time and it takes resources. So an individual sort of teenage hacker sitting in the basement is not going to get that much use out of this, especially compared to doing something like breaking into all of Target's point of sale devices, which will get you a lot of people's credit card information really fast. This bug would be great for the NSA. It would be a dream come true for them, and I'm relatively certain that they're kind of upset that we found it. But I don't think they had anything to do with creating it.
We're talking about the encryption security flaw known as Heartbleed and what you should do about your passwords with our guest, Rusty Foster, who wrote about it on the New Yorker website and writes the Daily Today and Tabs newsletter for Newsweek, 212-433-WNYC. And Mary in the Rockaways, tell us your story. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Okay.
I've had my computer hacked, and I changed the passwords, and I was being stalked, actually, and the person, they had remote access to my computer, so no matter how many times I changed the password, it didn't matter.
I see. I don't think that's relevant to this, though.
Well, you don't think it's relevant? Well, yeah, but anybody, once they get access to your computer, you can. What I'm saying is, it doesn't matter how many times you change the password. If they have access to your machine,
right,
then they have your information or whatever. I'm not talking about stalking.
I get you. So let me ask Rusty, if somebody has access to your computer, Mary is talking about having been stalked, actually. And once somebody got access to her computer remotely, then it didn't matter how many times she changed her passwords because they could see all that and, you know, keep getting through them. Is that relevant to the Heartbleed bug too?
Unlikely. That's very unlikely. This particular bug, it would make it very difficult to sort of intentionally target one person or one individual or stalk someone. What you're describing sounds more like somebody got a keystroke recorder onto her computer. So essentially they were recording everything that she typed and then sending it somewhere remotely. That would be my guess.
And Ben in Westchester posts this on our website. Important that you note that you need to change your bank password if you also use that password on Facebook. Do you agree, even though Mashable says banks weren't affected, but Facebook was?
Don't ever use the same password on Facebook and your bank.
Because?
That's an awful idea. I mean, don't use the same password anywhere, but if you're not going to use a password wallet or a password safe, at the very least have a couple of very secure passwords, like ones that are kind of hard to remember. Maybe you keep them in your wallet. I hate to recommend that, but it's better than sharing passwords between Facebook and your bank. So, you know, banking passwords, use something hard to remember, and Facebook or Twitter or whatever. Also your email. Keep your email very secure, because if somebody can break into your email, they can get into lots of other services that you use.
And Ali tweets us this question. If you are logging into Facebook and such via phone and tablet apps, will the passwords and information be affected that way through the apps as opposed to through websites?
In this case, what was targeted would be servers. Generally the servers were what had the bug. So it doesn't really matter what you're accessing them through, whether it's your phone or your tablet or your laptop.
John in Brooklyn.
You're talking to the same servers.
John in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Yesterday, Apple released a statement concerning this problem that their systems are not, or their computers are not as acceptable to attack on this particular issue. I have not seen that statement on the website. That we're just replying to an inquiry from some other company. We're just looking for it in my computer here now. But anyway, does your guest have any comments concerning Apple's statement? Thanks.
Thank you. So if Apple said that their servers are not vulnerable to this, not affected, can you confirm that, Rusty?
I would only be going on what Apple says. I don't have any independent, confirmation.
But your understanding is that Apple is saying that? Or have you seen that? That's what the caller said. Do you know that they said that?
I believe that's true, but I'm not looking at anything that's telling me that right now. I think that I did see that, though, yeah.
Before you go, you have a bigger takeaway in your piece for The New Yorker, which is that so much of the Internet's infrastructure is built and maintained by volunteers, and things like security aren't sexy enough to get funding and support.
Right.
Do we have the wrong priorities if all the venture capital money is going into building the next Pinterest and things like that?
Not necessarily. I don't know if I'd like go that far, because sort of paying somebody to maintain OpenSSL or paying a couple of people to, go through the code and refactor it and make it a little easier to work on and a little more straightforward is not an enormous, investment. It's not the kind of money that you need to build the next Pinterest. It's just a couple of programmer salaries. In this case, one of the researchers who found this bug worked for Google Security. So they are, the bigger internet companies do invest in security to some extent. But this particular piece of the infrastructure, I think, was not necessarily getting the support that it really needs. And I hope maybe that'll change out of this.
All right. There you have it, folks. A little bit of what to do and what to know about the encryption security flaw known as Heartbleed from Rusty Foster, who wrote about it for The New Yorker. We've linked to his excellent piece, by the way. You can get there through WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. We also link to Mashable's list of sites that are and aren't affected. Get to that through WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. You can also use the comments page there and keep exchanging information with each other. Rusty Foster, computer programmer, writes the Today in Tabs daily newsletter for Newsweek. Rusty, thank you very much. Very helpful.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehr on WNYC. Still to come this morning, de Blasio's 100-day speech. Not many clues about the second 100 days. Citizen Canine today, the rights of dogs and cats. The mayor of Old Amsterdam is in New Amsterdam today. We'll compare notes. And Margarita fans on guard will explain the growing lime shortage. Stay with us on this Friday Brian Lehr Show on WNYC.